This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is sponsored by Macmillan Audio and Destiny of the Dead, the second audiobook in the Shroud of Prophecy series, written by Kel Cade and read by Nick Podell. With dogged determination and the ability to bind souls to their dead bodies, Aslo and his friends continue to fight the Beru's monstrous army. Meanwhile, Shiri, the avatar of a vengeful fire god, has united the survivors and begun her own war on the invaders. Now, Aslo and Shiri must find a way to unite their powers to throw back the monsters of the Beru and challenge death itself. Again, that's Destiny of the Dead by Kel Cade, in audiobook read by Nick Podell from Macmillan Audio. Welcome to SFF Yeah, a podcast dedicated to all things science fiction and fantasy. This is episode 125, and we are recording on March 18th. I'm Jen Northington, and I'm here with Vanessa Diaz, covering for Sharifa Williams, who is out with like a serious frog in her throat situation. But Vanessa, is always such a pleasure to have you on the show.
I'm excited to be back. Obviously, under better circumstances would be better, but our poor friend sounds like the Crypt Keeper, so here we are.
She really does. It's something, y'all. It's something. So one day she'll have her voice back, and on that day she will be back in her podcasting chair. But until then, we are delighted by Vanessa's presence in our midst. And so today, this was fun, actually, because we had to redo the whole agenda when we realized Sharifa wasn't going to be able to record. But it meant that I could sneak in a listener request. Big shout out to Robert, who sent us a delightful email and a request to talk about speculative poetry. And I was like, oh, I feel like we did that before. And I went and checked in. The last time was 2020. So that was a whole 2 years ago. Yep. So it's time for a refresh. And I will say, what was interesting about Robert's email was that it mentions how much poetry is in some science fiction and fantasy books, like how it's not that the books are written in poetry, but there's like poetry in the books, like spells or like songs or, you know, like the One Ring poem, right, is a famous example.
Oh, totally.
Which I am on record as being tired of hearing in pre-trailers of things.
Like,
still, it's iconic. So, and that's not what we're going to talk about today. I have that filed away for another episode where we have a little more prep time to like locate and think about that. So today we're just going to talk about speculative poetry that we found. And I think both of us have like a very complicated hashtag relationship with poetry. So this will be fun.
Yeah, I was obviously this topic just lended itself to us being able to pull stuff together. But I think Jen and I have both talked about separately and together about how we sometimes feel like we're bad at poetry.
Yes.
I enjoy it. I like engaging with it. I love it on audio in particular, which, you know, in theory is how poetry was like always meant to be consumed. But I am absolutely one of those people that can quickly get drawn into that, like, I don't get this because I want to analyze it the way I would a piece of just regular prose. And that is just not how you have to engage with a lot of poetry. You kind of just have to let it happen. And that I'm not always a let it happen person, but I'm trying to be. And one of these poems was an absolute let it happen to me that I was like, okay, I'm going to, even though, we'll get to that later, but. Yeah,
I was going to say, I had a very interesting experience prepping for this, but we'll talk about that when we get to the actual topic. First, we're going to do some sponsors and some news. So our sponsor, which I will say I am very excited to talk about while Vanessa is on the show, because we share a love of tea that is epic.
Oh, yes.
So this sponsor is A Magic Steeped in Poison by Judy I. Lin with Fierce Reads. And this is about a magical tea situation.
Pardon?
For Ning, our main character, the only thing worse than losing her mother is knowing that it's her own fault. She was the one who unknowingly brewed the poison tea that killed her, the poison tea that now threatens to also take her sister Shu. When Ning hears of a competition to find the kingdom's greatest Shenongshi, masters of the ancient and magical art of tea making, she travels to the imperial city to compete. The winner will receive a favor from the princess, which may be Ning's only chance to save her sister's life. But between the backstabbing competitors, bloody court politics, and a mysterious and handsome boy with a shocking secret, Ning might actually be the one in more danger. This is a debut novel that they are billing as perfect for fans of Leigh Bardugo and Adrian Young. I like, side note, fans of tea and competitions, though, hello, like me. This is my wheelhouse right here. This is it. And this is also inspired by Chinese and Taiwanese history and mythology, which puts a fantastical spin on the art of tea making. Like, just put it in my eyeballs right now. So, yeah, I'm very excited about this sponsor, as you can tell.
I needed to mute myself there.
Yeah. It is the first in a duology. The book 2 of Venom, Dark and Sweet is coming out this year as well in August. It's like they knew that I wasn't going to want to wait. Yes, again, this is A Magic Steeped in Poison by Judy I. Lin with Fierce Reads. Hashtag put it in my eyeballs.
I absolutely want that now.
Yes, right? Like, I need it. I confess, I was prepping for the show and I saw this and I went and grabbed the galley on Edelweiss immediately.
I was muted like, myself to open Edelweiss so you couldn't hear me typing. I was like,
Oh, delightful.
Love when that
happens. All right, Vanessa. So, you know, guest choice. What news story do you want to talk about first?
I can't wait to talk about this one. So the trailer for Ms. Marvel has dropped. It dropped on the 15th. I have such a, so first I'm just a big Marvel person and I became a Marvel person during the pandemic. I always kind of had, I think I maybe had seen, you know, like the Iron Man movies or something to that effect. And then over the pandemic was like, yes, I should watch all 20 of these films in succession in like the chronological order someone suggested. And Ms. Marvel has like just been one of my favorite characters who would like, you know, the version that some of you may be more familiar with is the version that has been played by, oh my gosh. What is her name? Brie Larson?
Larson.
Carol Danvers character. But Kamala Khan is another Miss Marvel from a comic that Jen told me to read years ago when I was like, I'm in a slump and I want to read something. She's like, oh my gosh, you got to do some like comics and graphic novels. Go grab you this, this, and this. So like I did exactly that. And I sat down to read Miss Marvel and was like, this is kind of meh. Like I felt like there was no story development. And that it wasn't until the day that this comic was due at the library that I was just like thumbing through it casually when I realized that when I opened the book, lean of the comic a little wider, I could see tear marks. Someone had just perfectly like exacto knifed a chunk of this comic. So like, no wonder it made no sense to me. I was just like, she went from like walking down the street to magically being a superhero. Like, I don't get this.
No!
So the ones I went back, actually, I mean, what a compelling character. She's this like Pakistani American teen living in Jersey. And when she, you know, hey, one day is exposed to this mist, I believe, and that gains superpowers that way. And now the trailer has dropped and it's just everything. Like, did you get a chance to watch it?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I was like a week and a half late to watching this, but I finally watched it yesterday. And I was just also hashtag put it in my eyeballs. Like it looks so good. It looks so good. Iman Vellani is the actress who's playing Kamala.
Yes.
And oh, my God, she's amazing.
It's just it has such a like fun tone to it. I like it just looked very youthful, which I was wanting it to feel that way. I just obviously Marvel for the most part is focused on older characters and that's fine. And so I was worried they were going to kind of, I don't know, sex it up, I guess.
Oh God.
And she looks like just such a wonderful version of this character. I cannot wait to watch this. And I don't actually remember when it drops. I was just so jazzed about the trailer that I forgot to check like when the actual series is coming.
Yeah, it does have Spider-Man vibes to me, like this new Tom Holland Spider-Man. It's very much in line tonally, I think, with that, which is awesome. And yes, I too, well, now I'm checking this post that we're linking to. It's a post on Book Riot, surprise. But yeah, it's going to be a series on Disney+. It does not say when it comes out in here. Whoops. Well, you all can Google and we'll Google as well. I'll update it in the show notes. But I was a little nervous about this one, not going to lie. Mm-hmm. And then I watched the trailer and I was like, well, now I'm all in, which is complicated because I already canceled my Disney Plus subscription. I'm going to have to reopen it so that I can watch this. And let me tell you that it pretty much takes Kamala Khan for me to want to resubscribe to Disney Plus. But I will do it for Kamala. It's interesting, too. They've made some changes that I don't know. I'm sure it's fine, but her powers look a little different. The way that, you know, her costume came together in the books was so rooted in her Muslim heritage. Yep. Like, she turns a burkini into her superhero outfit in the comics, which I thought was just, like, amazing and brilliant. Such, like, a cool storytelling moment. And it doesn't seem like that's going to happen on the show. But also, I'm psyching myself up to let the show be the show. Yep. Like, it's a different thing than the comics. Obviously, they're related, but they don't have to be the same to both be good. And we will always have the comic to go back to. So,
absolutely. Yeah, I wondered the same thing, and I wasn't sure if it was just like, hey, this is like a thing that's going to happen off screen. And then I arrived at the same place. I'm like, well, I'm just going to have to let this happen and then engage with it critically at that time.
yeah, exactly. Exactly. So some changes, but the trailer is incredible. So I am very jazzed for this. I do want to make a quick note about Disney because they're in sort of a complicated news moment right now. By the time this airs, the walkouts will have happened, but I'm linking to a piece in The Guardian that is about Disney's staff staging walkouts over Florida's Don't Say Gay bill. This is reported on by Maya Yang. And the issue here is that there is a bill in Florida which basically disallows all discussion of sexuality and gender identity in schools, which is a travesty. And they employees have been asking Disney to speak out publicly about this bill to condemn it because, you know, obvious reasons why. Disney has a lot of clout. They could do a lot of good. But corporate leadership is like, no, we don't need to do that. And the staff are not happy about it. So I thought it was interesting that Marvel Studios, which is owned by Disney, has publicly denounced the bill. So that's nice. But just to point out that we have complicated feelings about Disney right now, and that's fine. We can have complicated feelings about it.
So many complicated feelings every day of my life.
All day, every day. That is the modern life.
That is where we are.
That's where we're at. Okay, let's see. Let's go to the Nebula finalists next. I want to talk about the Nebula finalists. So this list is on the Nebula Awards site, and the finalists were recently announced. I'm not going to read all of them. There are, you know how long these lists are. Yeah, there's many. But I was delighted to see some Book Riot and personal favorites in these categories. In the category for novel, The Unbroken by C.L. Clarke, which, let me tell you, people will not shut up about around here. Master of Gin by P. Jelly Clark. Vanessa, are we fans or are we fans?
That was the one that I was like, it's mine. I wanted to win. I mean, they're all great. But anyway, I'm so obsessed. Continue.
Yeah. And then Machinehood by S.B. Divya, which was one of my favorite sci-fi novels of last year. I talked about it a bunch in various podcasts, and I really loved it. And then A Desolation Called Peace by Arkady Martin, which is the second book in the series. I've read the first one. I haven't read the second one. And then Plague Birds by Jason Sanford, which I'm not familiar with, but clearly need to get on top of. There are a bunch of great authors in the novella Nebula category. Becky Chambers, Elliot Dibadard, Premi Mohammed, who I also really love. There's some folks who are new to me that I'm going to have to look into. And I do want to call out real quick that I love this story I found that Martha Wells declined a Nebula nomination in the novella category for Murderbot 6, which, like, feels extremely correct. Like, Murderbot has been on these lists since they started publishing. Yep. And often wins, and that's great because they are great. But, like, Martha was like, I think it's time for other people to get a little share of the glory here. And I just really, I respect that.
I was going to say, it is both an extremely respectful thing as an author and also the most probably unintentional, but, like, heaviest of humble brags, which is like,
yes,
I have won all your things. Give them to someone else.
Right. I don't need any more of these
good trophies.
Thanks. It's fine.
Yes. Go off, Martha.
Yes, exactly. Big respect for Martha Wells for that move. I appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so excited. I was so excited to see the ones that I do recognize on this list that I momentarily did not choose to think about how many of these things on this list I have not read of these nominees.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, especially in like the short story categories. And but the ones that I have read, I'm super, super jazzed about. I loved Master of Jin like so much. But yeah, talk about expanding the TBR.
Yeah, no doubt. This every time these lists come up, Sharif and I are like, here we go. Like,
here we are once again.
Got some reading to do.
So exciting.
All right. What news story would you like to go to next?
Let's go to the interview with Buffy. Well, not with Buffy. Yes. Yeah, that made it sound like they were actually interviewing Buffy. Yeah, we special SFF episode with Sarah Michelle Gellar. No, not really. So as reported on AV Club by Gabriel Sanchez, Evan Ross Katz has been interviewed for his Buffy book. Like, he has a Buffy book coming out. And I mean, it's been 25 years since Buffy was on the air. So it was fun to read through the article and just kind of go down memory lane. I didn't watch the entirety of the series, but I, you know, did watch the beginning. And so this interview basically goes into like Buffy for all that it is, all that it isn't, and, you know, exploring what they call like the Joss Whedon of it all, which is you know, the complication of the fact that, I mean, I really loved basically that Katz was willing to engage with it. And it seems like he says several times, like, I don't have any preciousness towards this series. Like, I'm willing to engage with it critically. I always have. You know, goes into all the ways in which Buffy was in some ways like a feminist masterpiece, but was also hella white. And now, you know, how it's sort of complicated by the fact that Charisma Carpenter, you know, was the first who came out. Was it last year with her stories?
Yeah,
of
she
Whedon's
sort of
abuse?
Started the Katz notes, Kai Cole, Joss's ex-wife, who was part of that. Those allegations have been out there for a while, but Charisma Carpenter, really broke it open in October. No, yeah, it looks like May 2020. The big statements were March 2021.
That's right.
Yeah, the timeline is complicated, but anyway, yes, it's very, there's a lot of, that was a reckoning. There's no doubt.
And I'll just which touches leave it a there. Lot of other, you know, bodies of work, I guess is the easiest way to put that. But were you a Buffy person? Like, did you watch it?
You know, it's funny. I did not start. So you'll appreciate this. My first indie bookstore job out of college, I was like, you know, trying to get to know my coworkers. And I had never really watched Buffy ever. And one of them invited me to a group of them had a weekly Buffy night where they would get together. They were rewatching the series. They were like, they'd have beer and like chips and everybody would bring a little snack. And I was like, well, I don't care about Buffy, but like, I want to meet these people and like become friends with them. So I went and then quickly got like obsessed with it.
Yep.
So I have seen all of it. I own my favorite seasons, which are 3 and 7. Don't at me. And but I also have a lot of complicated feelings about it. This is the complicated feelings show. So it was nice to. I was a little nervous about this book, honestly. I was like, how much is he going to get into it? But it seems like he really is like, yep, let's talk about the whiteness. Let's talk about the Whedon stuff. Let's talk about it all. Like, and that does actually kind of make me want to pick this book up.
Yeah, same. That's always my nervousness when like going back to stuff that we love is like, it's.
Yeah.
You just have to approach it critically. Like, there's no one's necessarily telling you to completely dissociate yourself from things. It's just, you know, look at them with a different lens and like talk about it. And yeah, I had that same fear, but he made it pretty clear. Obviously the book itself will have to speak for itself, but then he was like, no, like you said, let's talk about it.
I was sort of laughing about how he's like, I'm precious about Sarah Michelle Gellar. Buffy. I was like, all right, that's a statement.
Yeah, I chuckled at that.
Yeah.
But then the other stuff he mentioned her for was like, he's like, yeah, why don't people ever, like, when they still see her and they're like, oh, hey, Buffy, and they don't talk about, like, Scooby-Doo or Cruel Intentions or whatever. I'm like, I mean, to be fair, I would call her Buffy out of all those things, too, as far as, like, what her legacy was like. Like, hey, Scooby-Doo girl. Like, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, it's so funny. So yeah, so it's an interesting interview. I think it's worth a read if you are a Buffy fan. Yeah. And you know, you can decide for yourself about the book.
Absolutely.
All right. So our final little funsy news story in here. Sharif and I talk semi-regularly about nerd stuff in fashion. And so I could not resist chucking this on here. This is from Gizmodo, reported by Andrew Lazuski. Reebok is doing a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers villain shoe. Because that's a thing that is happening in our lives. And so I was very excited to talk about this with Vanessa, because Vanessa, you have a different relationship with Power Rangers than I do.
Yeah, my brother was the one that like super got into it. My brother and I are about 3.5 years apart. So I would have been obviously a teeny bit older than him when like the series was at its high. But the real thing that honestly made me start paying attention to it was because like one of those Christmases around the time that the series got released, my brother wanted the like white Zord or whatever it was like thing, and so my parents dragged me to every Toys R Us in like the San Diego collective area trying to find this thing. And I had a moment, I've been this way since a child, I'm like, well, now that we've bought this thing, like now I need to engage with this series. Probably didn't phrase it that way, but I was like, fine, and then started watching it with him, and then we kind of like had fun with it. We would, you know, have little fights in the living room like playing along with the show, so this is very delightful to like my child self.
That's amazing. Yeah, I did not. I was telling Vanessa this yesterday. I did not watch it as a kid. I think by the time, you know, my parents were really strict about our TV for a very long time. And I think the first time I probably saw a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers episode was like when I was 12, which was too late. Like at that point, it was too late. I was trying to be cool. I mean, I was not cool, but I thought I was going to be cool someday. So like that was not a show I was going to watch. But I really thought maybe someday I'll be
my cool ascendance moment.
Yes, exactly. So I think I would have loved it if I had seen it earlier than that, but I missed the boat on Power Rangers. But I'm always like sort of delighted to see this kind of stuff out there, because I know, you know, how formative shows like that have been for folks. And I just love to see the way that nerd culture manifests in fashion. Like it's so interesting what gets spotlighted.
No, absolutely.
And now we have villain shoes. So
I'm trying to figure out if they have like I didn't pay attention to whether like the size ranges go down to kids, because my nephew is absolutely currently engaging with like whatever the latest iteration of Power Rangers is. That'd be,
I would believe that it would be a huge oversight to not do children's
like
sizes
you have to,
in this. So you'd have to. They're probably a bajillion dollars, but they probably exist.
For a foot that grows like every 2 weeks.
I was going to say, how long will he actually be able to wear them for?
Yeah, we've been there. But yeah, this is super fun. I'm glad to see it.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, shall I tell us about our next sponsor?
Do it.
All right. So this episode of SFF Yeah is sponsored by Tor Books. In an alternate dimension, massive dinosaur-like creatures named kaiju roam a warm and human-free world. They're the universe's largest and most dangerous endangered species, and they're in trouble. It's not just the Kaiju Preservation Society who have found their way to the alternate world. Others have too, and their carelessness could cause millions back on our Earth to die. So the Kaiju Preservation Society is a new science fiction adventure that takes a fresh spin on the kaiju genre. Think, you know, Godzilla. With lots of thrills and wit, and John Scalzi is a New York Times bestselling and Hugo Award-winning author. There's already television rights for the Kaiju Preservation Society in the works. So yes, if this is, you know, this sounds exciting to me, because I also loved Godzilla as a child, because anything that's fun and monstrous has always been in my vein. So anyway, that's available now wherever books are sold, and thank you to Tor Books.
Amazing. That is definitely a new take on it. Preservation.
Sure.
I'm just
is.
Thinking about like Pacific Rim is like the last kaiju things I watched. So
that's what kept coming up when I wanted to make sure I got, you know, some pronunciations right. I was like, oh yeah, Pacific Rim.
Right. Not so much on the preservation angle.
Nope, not
things.
So much. Nope. But you know.
That's what science fiction is for. All right. So now we're going to get into poetry. So, okay. So I said at the top that I had an interesting experience with this.
Yes.
So, yeah, I have been dipping in and out of poetry for years. I'll go through phases where I'm like, I'm going to read it. And I do. And then I stop. And then I come back. And then I stop again. And I, you know, I'm all over the place with it. I think it was interesting this time. I think I have gotten better at not caring so much about how, like, I always feel like I'm reading a poetry collection wrong if I read it like I read a regular book, meaning I just read them one after the other after the other. But I've tried doing it other ways, and that also doesn't work for me. So I've given up on trying to read poetry the quote unquote right way, which probably isn't even, I mean, that's probably not even a thing, but in my head, it's a thing. So I'm letting go of that, which worked very well for me for my first pick, which was Clockstar Rose Spine by Fran Wilde. It is a whole collection of poems from Wilde, whose name should not be unfamiliar to listeners. She's a double Nebula award-winning author. And she says in an interview in the back of this collection that poetry was sort of her first writing love, but she went away from it and has only recently returned to it. And this collection, y'all, is so pretty, first of all. It's got like pen and ink drawings from Wilde interspersed with the poetry. And apparently she's like a fountain pen enthusiast. And so these are pen and ink, like fountain pen and ink drawings, which I just think is really cool. And a lot of these poems are not necessarily what I would call speculative. Like some of them are very sort of memoir-y, personal stories, or just like descriptions of nature and moments and time. But a couple of them are definitely stories. And I was dying over this one called You Are 2.3 Meters From Your Destination. Subtitle, Commencing Route for Orpheus of Thrace. It is an Orpheus retelling done as like, like Google Maps directions.
Oh.
In and out of Hades. It is amazing. It's so funny and smart. And I was just like totally delighted by that. There's also a poem in here that is a resume for an unnamed goddess who is Hecate. Side note. And it's like, this is like, okay, like goals include is the opening words. It's genius, right? Like I was so sort of surprised and delighted by this use of poetry. I just wasn't prepared for it. And I really loved that. And then there's also some other more sort of less funny, more contemplative ones, like The Sea Never Says It Loves You. That is just like you could marry the sea. Like, what would it be like if you were in a relationship with the sea? And it's just beautiful. So I was not sad that I read this collection, and I tore through it, and I feel fine about that.
Well, you win. That's it. I'm leaving. I mean, between like the Hecate and the Orpheus thing, I was like, well,
yes,
cool. I'm gonna want that. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, I will send you my copy. I think you will.
Oh, love I want it. That. Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that I'm tend to be drawn to, but. Okay. Well,
right.
I guess I will tell you, which I am very jazzed about my picks. So like that makes it sound like I think mine are not valid. And that's not it. It's just that I really liked Jen's. But so the way I approached it for me is that because again, I too feel like I was like, am I engaging with poetry correctly? And I have definitely found poets in recent years that like make me feel differently about that. But I was kind of hell-bent at first on picking two that felt more like stories. And then I realized I was once again like boxing myself into like trying to define poetry in ways that maybe don't need to. So one of mine is very much more what I think is like kind of like story structured. And one is actually very, very short and like borderline to me is like, is this speculative? But I do think it is, just to kind of capture some breadth and depth, I guess. But my first pick comes from Uncanny Magazine, which is really great. SFF. Mag that comes everything from, you know, fiction, poetry, nonfic. It's a wonderful collection. And the first one that I picked is called Dancing Princesses. It's by Roshini Chokshi, who's one of my faves. If you, you know, don't know her, she's the author of the Gilded Wolves series and the Arusha series, which are YA and I believe middle grade respectively, but just such an inventive and very beautiful person, side note.
Seriously.
Like stunningly beautiful. But the Dancing Princesses, I was like, where have I heard this before? Well, she actually wrote a novella that is like about, it's like a remix of the story of the Dancing Princesses, the 12 Dancing Princesses, which is itself a story about, it's done by the, I think, Grimm Brothers. It's been redone a thousand times.
Yeah,
right, so it's these 12 princesses who are locked every night in their rooms by the king, you know, their father, but he can't figure out why it is that their slippers are always like worn the next day. Like they're worn all the way down as though they've been out and about doing stuff. And he's like, how is this possible? I've been locking you in your rooms. And so he opens up this competition to all of, like, the princes in the land that if any of them can solve it in, I think, like three days and three nights, like solve the mystery, then he can pick any one of them, I think, for his bride. And I'm giving that context to then describe this poem, which takes it has a, you know, little introduction, and then it breaks down in 12 different stanzas, kind of the perspective of each of these 12 daughters and how it's like a reinterpretation of what the door in the story means for each of them. It's really subversive and talks about like what each of them is looking for, with the door representing like a different form of escape for each of them. Some of it feels a little dark. I mean, it all is a little bit dark, to be fair, but some more than others. And again, I was at first trying very hard to define like specifically what each of those pieces meant. And then I kind of just took a step back and looked at it more from a like, okay, what is the overall like arching theme of this? And there is a lot of, I think, great stuff to be gleaned about like liminal spaces and yeah, like what escape means for each of us, and also asks you to kind of redefine the like happily ever after, like what happens after the ever after, and like was it ever really happy for some of the women in these stories? So in that way, I thought it was really, really smart. I just love her way with words. There's some sentences in there that are just chef's kiss. So that was why I picked this one, and I need to go back and kind of engage with it, I think, a few more times.
I love that. I don't know why it never occurred to me to look for poetry from authors who I've already read. Like,
which you can clearly tell is what I did.
Yes, but that's so smart and interesting, because like, what an opportunity to think about an author's work from different angles. Like, how I'm like sort of over here kicking myself, like, why didn't I think of
that? Well, we both win.
We do both win. This is why we have multiple hosts. We come at things from different angles, yes, and we learn something new every time. So yeah, I am not sad about my picks either, but I like can't wait to go in and read the ones that you found as well. So, and I love Roshni Chokshi's work. So, and the 12 Dancing Princesses. So that's like right in my wheelhouse right there.
Wahaha.
I picked two more. I'm cheating a little bit here, but these are shorter picks than my collection picks. So both of these are from Strange Horizons. I'll just start by talking about the first one, which is All the Army Ghost Stories I Have Heard by Natalie Wang. And this is, as you might guess, a ghost story poem. And it's just like sort of a litany of, these sort of not like urban legends, but that kind of feel to it, right? The things that get passed around and like, oh, did you hear about the one who, but they're like army ghosty. Some of them are kind of funny. Some of them are like really dark. And the whole vibe of it, I mean, this poem is a big mood is what I want to say. This poem is such a vibe, such a mood. And I really enjoyed this use of, you know, playing with these like rumors and legends and stories that are like campfire-y, but it has more depth and weight to it in the way that Wang puts it all together. And I was very compelled by it. And I discovered that Wang also has a collection of poems called The Woman Who Turned Into a Vending Machine, which, like,
yes.
I'm sold from the title, right? Like, I'm sold. I'm 100% sold. And then, you know, you actually find out what it's about, which is metamorphosis, myth, and womanhood. So, like, yes, sure, obviously. So I am, you know, going to put in my order for that collection, because now that I've, like, read a whole collection of speculative poetry, I want to read more. And I'm really excited to have found Wang via Strange Horizons, which I literally just went to the Strange Horizons website and then went into the poetry archives, because that's a thing you can do. We like talked about how great speculative fiction literary magazines are in a recent episode. And like, this is why, y'all. Like, it's out there for you. It's just sitting there waiting for you to read it. It's amazing. So
yeah, I actually did the same with, we both took our picks from like the same magazines, like just mm-hmm. unintentionally, I imagine, to some degree. But like, so Jen did all of hers from Strange Horizons. I did mine from Uncanny. And yeah, it's amazing how easily accessible it was to just go to poetry. And while you know, you don't necessarily want to judge anything by a cover or just the title, like the titles alone, because it's spec. Yes. I was like, how do I pick from these? It was like, things you don't say to witches, child memory from an old Victorian house, right. stuff on fire, magicians speaking to fools. I was like, what, which one do I pick? So yeah, it was an experience. But as Jen alluded to, I had the idea to go and see if I could find stuff by like just authors that I really love in these. And I kind of just typed in some names at random and was super pleased when I realized that they did indeed have not only one, but two. So as Jen was talking about the fact that she cheated and actually included two poems, I was slightly typing, oh, well, in that case, I'm going to add a second one too, because I had similar feelings. So the second author that I'm going to talk about is Valerie Valdez, who is a book riot, but specifically Jen and I's fave. Like, I love her.
Oh, yes.
Cuban writer, author of, I was going to say Prime Deceptions, which is actually, I think, the
Chilling
second
effect.
One. Chilling Effect is the first one, yes. Which, you know, space cats, Cuban cursing, spaceships.
Amazing.
Space opera, like, all the things. And so she has several, I think three different poems up on Uncanny. And the first one is one that I wasn't going to initially talk about because it is so short. It is like a whopping 320 words. But I kept coming back to it because of the like simplicity and like beauty of the concept. So the poem is called Assimilation. So I was already like, okay, I want to know about this, especially because I know what Valerie Valdez is about. And it is this really tight, short, little poem that is just about exactly what it sounds like. Like, I mean, some of the lines that I remember are like, my hair is too wild, so I tamed it. My skin is too dark, so I lightened it. My tongue is so wrong that I cut it out. That's like the first section. And then there's the second part. And it just ends with this idea that in order to assimilate, you have to dull yourself. Like, the final lines of the book were something about, like, I discarded my bones until I was left with a simmering stock of who I must become that's crying out for salt and spice. And I, it's just, it is, there's so few words on this page, but this was a perfect example to me of what poetry can do if you just don't try to put it in a box and like let it happen to you, because that is what I did with this. And it spoke to me so much, even though there's so little to actually guide me on the page, but it just makes perfect sense and it flows beautifully. So that was, I just couldn't not talk about it because I loved it.
I have literal goosebumps.
It's so good, Jen. Like, I mean, again, I had such a reaction to it that I kept, I had like 20 other poems that I was thinking about doing, and I came back to it because I was like, that right there is like the distillation of like what poetry can do if you just let it do its thing.
Wow.
And then she has a second one called Keening that is, it's a little bit longer. It's like 400 words maybe, but it's the story of a girl or woman who wakes up in her bed with no memory of pain. But she tastes steel and sees like three droplets of blood on her white sheets, and then is kind of recounting this story that her abuela like told her about someone called the afilador, which is the man who sharpens knives. And so she's trying to remember, basically, like when she kind of hears the afilador whistling her name, like, is he coming or is he going? And what happened in the in-between. So it's really eerie in that way. And she does the thing that I love, which is she just drops random Spanish words in there. And they're not, you know, pretty ones. It's like trapo, which is a way of saying like, it's rag, like a rag. And a palo, which is like a stick. Like, they're not, it's kind of just words that you have to engage with if you like understand Spanish. And they're not italicized. So it just felt so authentic. And again, it has that like hazy, eerie feeling where like, I still don't exactly know what it is that happened. And I think that's the point. But at the end of it, you feel like unsettled. And that was all in a whopping, again, like 370 words. So now I too am like, I need to go through and read more poetry, because as a person who's been in a reading slump for a bit, like,
yeah,
this was just such a cool, like, big, like, visceral reaction for me to have to two poems that, like, combined don't even, you know, it's not even like 1,000 words. And yet I have feelings. And that is lovely.
Yeah.
And that is my story.
That is sorcery right there. That's sorcery.
I love Valerie Valdez. She's so good.
Oh, she's so good. She's like ridiculous. So yeah. So my final cheater poem.
Oh, you
is is fire. Let me just preface with, I found this, I was just clicking around and I honestly don't remember how I found this one, but it was like fate, because I am obsessed with this poem. It's called On Where to Find Strange Horizons and How to Get There by Julia Rios. And it is a like amazing sort of meta cultural analysis of what it means for a community to grapple with its history and its like our complicated feelings. Like, we really truly, this I just like, can't, I'm like having trouble making it, it's ridiculous. So this poem, and there's a little bit of framing around this, this poem is part of a special issue that Strange Horizons did for their 20th anniversary, and Rios was an editor at Strange Horizons and also one of the first voices of the poetry podcast, which brings me to, I read this poem two ways. First, I read it with my eyeballs. And then I was like, well, the link to the podcast is right here. Like, maybe I should listen to it. Because as you said, Vanessa, like, yeah, poetry is meant to be spoken aloud, right? But I often don't listen to things because I really struggle to process audio information that is only audio. Like, I just have such a hard time. I'm not good at it. My brain doesn't want to do it. So but I did this poem both ways. And I will say that I'm glad I listened to it, but I still struggled to focus in the way that I really wanted to like fully absorb Rios's, you know, intent and words and goals. But this poem, it's broken into several different sections, some of which are like in meme format. Like, it does, it plays with the whole, you know, regular brain, planet brain, galaxy brain. You know what meme, yes, I'm talking about. That meme. There's one in here that's like, you know, it's a word problem. Like, two trains leave two stations at the same time. Like, Rios is just playing with everything here, but it is also so incisive. And the sort of meta context of this poem is that, you know, the sci-fi fantasy community has been grappling with the systemic racism baked into its communities for since the start of it, right? Like, how authors of color have not been acknowledged, how now we're just starting to, but a lot of the awards are named after, you know, white supremacists, like all of these things, you know, the crazy voting shenanigans that have happened with the Hugos, like all of these things Rios is talking about here, but in this very, like, I can only say in a poetry way, like, this is, it felt to me like, oh, yes, this is what poetry is for. Like, this is what poetry can do. And I just, I'm just blown away by this poem. And it was very cool to listen to them read it, because there's a little section in here that's like a little bit of like a chanty bit. And that part in particular was cool to hear the rhythm from the poet themselves. But largely, I processed it better when I read it. And I like highly, I mean, I cannot recommend strongly enough, whether you read it with your eyeballs or your ears, like, go read it. It's so good. It's so good.
I'm staring at it right now. And this is nothing short of brilliant.
Right? It is freaking brilliant. It is freaking brilliant.
This recipe. Like, yes. There's just so much in here. Julia
and the cyclical nature of it. Like, oh my goodness. It is really, really, really epic.
I'm going to have to look up more of their work too. Because, yeah.
Yes.
Good job.
Yeah.
I will, I know, right? To hang a lantern on something that Jen just said, the really cool thing about both of these sites, and I found with a lot of poetry sites in general, is that a lot of them do have now podcasts or like other, you know, mediums where they read the poems out loud. So yeah, every single poem that I engaged with for this show had at the bottom like a, you can also find this on this podcast in this episode, and then I could go listen to it. And so I did, and it was awesome. Because, again, I do think that some poems could really, really have like a new layer if you hear them read. And it was great. It's a nice different way to add a new layer.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes so much sense. And I'm so glad that that's like a norm, apparently. That's, you know, it's delightful. So delightful. This was a delightful last minute topic change. Yes.
I realized I totally like bogarted Jen halfway when she was talking through her poems. I was like, it's my turn. And
no, you didn't.
I got excited.
No, that was a natural handoff point. You did a great job. We always have a good time. We do.
And this was a great topic. This, super excited to go so do interesting. More of it.
Yeah, I am going to try to, like, because what will happen is I'll fall off the wagon again and, like, not think about this for 6 months.
I will see you on the floor next to that wagon. Right.
But at least we have the feeling of how cool it is to be in it while we're in it. Yes. So here we are. We're telling you there's no wrong way to do it is what we're saying. That's what we're trying to tell you. All right. Well, SFFYA is sound edited by Caitlin Braim. With so many thanks to her for fixing all of our flubs and making us sound better. If you would like more recommendations, including speculative poetry, we have recommendations for that over on bookriot.com. You can also find our other podcasts at bookriot.com/listen. And as always, thank you so much for listening and joining us on these adventures. If you would like to send us an email, maybe you have feedback, maybe you have pet pictures, maybe you have a theme suggestion, any and all welcome, sffyeah@bookriot.com. We also love to see those reviews come in on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps other nerds to find the show. And in between shows, Vanessa, where can people find you?
People can find me mostly on the gram at Buenos Dias, SD. Dias is spelled like my last name.
Awesome. And I am on Twitter and Tumblr as Jen IRL, JennIRL, or on Instagram as I am Jen IRL. And we will talk to you next time.